Hello, everybody. This is Season 2, Episode 5 of Roped In. I am your host, John Roper, and I've got a pretty fun episode ahead of us here. I'm going to be talking about the rise of the National Women's Soccer League. I recently saw a post of some kind of famous athletes that have invested in this National Women's Soccer League, and it got me interested in this league and kind of its rise, or what I think could be its rise of the future. I'm also going to be talking about the NCAA March Madness kind of preview questions. So teams that I think are going to be the first round brackets, kind of what I think is going to happen, just a bit of information on March Madness. And finally, where I'm going to end it off is it has been a wacky NFL offseason so far, and I'm going to be talking about who I think have been the winners and losers so far of the NFL offseason in terms of teams, players, situations, everything. So there you have it. Again, rise of National Women's Soccer League, NCAA March Madness preview, and that NFL offseason winners and losers so far. As always, sit back, relax, and let's get right into it. So again, as I said, there was a recent Instagram post that I saw that talked about some notable athletes, mainly American athletes, to be honest, they might all be all American athletes, that have invested in this National Women's Soccer League and the teams. And then it made me think of, you know, I want to do some research because, you know, football in America is, soccer for the North American fans, but it's going to be football for me forever. That's how you guys know it. Football for the North in America is really growing. It's exciting to see what's happening there. I think Messi's a really big part of it. He's drawing a lot of interest there. There's a lot of debates that can kind of go around on this, but I've always been a firm believer that once America decides to put money in a professional sports league and actually give it some interest, watch out. They're going to take over a lot of things there. As much as I hate to say it, they'll put the money in it. Now, I don't think that football is ever going to be bigger in America than it is in other places. It's never going to draw the top players. I think Europe just has too much of a lock. It's got the history there. It's got the kind of UEFA Champions Leagues. It's got those competitions of the different winners around the different countries of Europe that I think America can't do. It's mainly just geographically an unfortunate thing. They could get in there with South America, but Europe's just got that advantage of there's so many countries so close knit that all love the sport and all have good teams, that those top European championships, I think, is always going to be a big lure. I mean, you've seen Saudi Arabia try and do their money thing. Now, who knows? If they keep throwing money around, I'm not going to say they're not going to do it, but it's kind of shown that money's not the driver. Mbappe stayed behind to stay in Europe and grow his career there. So that's where I think it is. But either way, I don't know why I'm knocking this down, because what I actually want to say is football is growing, and I want to talk about the women's league. So again, the NWSL, the National Women's Soccer League in America, has some pretty big investors. So let me just quickly talk about it, because that's kind of what I said has sparked my interest on all of this. Angel City FC, you know, pretty much as it stands for, Los Angeles. So Angel City FC, they have Matthew Stafford and his wife Kelly. They've invested, they're pretty notable ones, but being LA, you know, they've got some other big ones. Mia Hamm, Abby Wambach, two pretty big American legends. You've also got Serena Williams, Billie Jean King, those big tennis players. Candace Parker is an investor. PK Subban, Lindsey Vonn, the skier. All investors of this Angel City FC. So pretty big names. You know, I'm not going to say they're only doing it because they want to see the sport grow. I think they also understand the business behind it. The sport is growing. They want to be a part of it, but I'm excited they are a part of it because these big names are going to draw the attention to it. People like myself, I'm now talking about it, so hopefully you are going to get the attention about it as well, and that's what's going to help this grow. So yes, it is a business decision because they are investing in it, seeing that this league is growing, and they want to grow their portfolio. Don't get me wrong there. But it's also nice, again, to see they want to grow this game. They want to grow this league in the National Women's NWSL. But yes, moving on, you know, Chicago Red Star, I'm not going to say they have any famous names, but Laura Ricketts was the name that I saw. She's famous to me because she's actually a Chicago Cubs co-owner, and I'm a Chicago Cubs super fan. I'm not going to say super fan, actually, but I'm a big Chicago Cubs fan, me and my father, me, you know, my family, my friends. all Chicago Cubs fans, but Laura Ricketts, the co-owner, also owner of Chicago Red Stars. Down in Houston, James Harden, he's a member of the Houston Dash. That's a pretty big name there. He's also a member of the Houston Dynamo. You know, he's got the investments in both the football teams down there. But that's exciting to see. Gotham FC, I absolutely love that name, out in New York. They've got Carly Lloyd. She used to play for them and used to be a national team player. We've also got Sue Bird out there, Kevin Durant. They've got Eli Manning. You know, some really big names investing out in that New York team. It makes sense. New York's a big city. The one that I think triggered the post and triggered basically all of this is Patrick Mahomes, his wife Brittany. They are investors in Kansas City Current, which made me do some research. And Chris Long is also an investor. That's a name for me. Just he went to the university my sister went to. They were friends. Then he played for my Philadelphia Eagles, E-A-G-L-E-S Eagles. But yeah, he's an investor with Patrick Mahomes on the Kansas City Current. Moving on as well, you know, Washington, they've got some Olympians, and some other, national team investors, Olympic Lyon Rain, got Tony Parker to invest that French team. They're the Seattle Rain. They went back to their team name this year. But Tony Parker is an investor of the Seattle Rain. Pretty big name there. Naomi Osaka, she is a fantastic tennis player, and she has invested in the North Carolina Courage. So, you know, it's exciting to see. I'm not going to say they've invested in a super long time. All of these investors have come on within the past, say, 5 years. But it's still exciting to see where it's gone. And it's kind of, again, made me look into this league and see certain things. So I'm going to explain a little bit of this National Women's Soccer League to you guys. So the America has tried to do a couple of professional women's soccer leagues in the past, and none of them have really gotten past their third season. The previous one was the Women's Professional Soccer, WPS. They folded in 2012. And then the National Women's Soccer League came around a year later. And in April 13, 2013, they held their first game. So there were 8 teams in the National Women's Soccer League, recruited all around the country, not just in one particular area. They kind of were spread out. And again, in 2013, they kind of held their first game. That first season, they really only had an average attendance of 4,000. It was not that impressive, but, you know, it was exciting to see the game come back. That really was fun to see. It's now grown. So as I've said, it's booming and busted. It's not a super crazy thing that I was able to find a lot of stats on. You know, I have noticed that in the past few years, where was it? Even last year. So in 2022, the final drew 915,000 viewers. Now, again, that's not a super crazy spectacular number, but that's a 71% increase from the year before. Franchises have rocketed. I mean, I think the Portland Thorns were valued at around $60 million for their upcoming sale. The sale that just recently happened. So that was pretty interesting to see that, you know, a league that had an average attendance of 4,000 to now have clubs that are being sold for $60 million. It's definitely a league that's growing. The women's game is very exciting to watch. I think it's always been dominant in America. That women's team has been a world dominating force for a long time. Team Canada has gone against them a lot. I've always rooted for Canada, but I think America does have the historical edge there. But yeah, it's really exciting to see this league grow. So again, it started in 2013 with 8 teams. Now it's up to 14 teams. It's got Angel City FC out in LA, Bay FC in San Jose, Chicago Red Stars, Houston Dash, Kansas City Current. Again, my favorite name, Gotham FC out in, I think they actually play in New Jersey, but of course they're called New York. North Carolina Courage, Orlando Pride, Portland Thorns, Racing Louisville, San Diego Wave, Seattle Reign, Utah Royals, and the Washington Spirit. They're all the kind of they're all the teams in the league. So it's exciting to see a lot of them. I'm not gonna say a lot of them. I think five of them have all been founded since 2020 in recent. So it's again another huge one that has come on there. Again, big investors all around there. A future team in Boston is going to be coming out, so that's going to be an exciting one to watch out there. They're a pretty good one. So that's really where it all comes down to. I think it's one that I'm not going to say I've been watching a crazy amount, but doing the research, names that I know that are in it. So some of the stars, Alex Morgan, she plays for San Diego. I think it's Bay FC. Marta, one of my favorite, actually not one of, she is my absolute favorite female player of all time. Brazil's number 10, the greatest female player of all time. She plays for Orlando Pride. Morgan Rapinoe, sorry if I've messed that up. She plays for Seattle. I'm not the biggest fan of her kind of media stuff, but she is a good player. I've got to give it to her there. Christine Sinclair, that amazing Canadian. She's right now, who does she play for? I believe she's playing for Portland Thorns. Another name that I know, Kelly O'Hara, that American player, she's playing for Gotham FC. So again, those are some pretty notable names that are in there. Sam Kerr, who's right now playing for my favorite team, Chelsea. She's playing for the Chelsea Lionesses. She's actually the leading scorer in the NWSL. So she played her major career out in New York, and then I think she finished it off in Chicago. But she played about 4 years and scored 77 goals in this National Women's Soccer League. So, you know, it's one that I'm not going to sit here and say I'm an expert on the league now, but it's definitely one that it's got my attention. I'm excited to watch. I think Christine Sinclair and Marta are the two players that I'm going to probably be following because they're my two favorite players in there. But it's going to be exciting to see where this goes. I love to see the boom of this league. I think it's going to be really, really cool. I mean, their opening weekend, a 16-year-old phenom, Alex Pfeiffer. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She scored her first goal against 16 years old. It was a record, the youngest player to ever score a goal in this league. Super crazy to watch. That game itself was also crazy to watch. I mean, it was her goal made it 5-1. So she plays for the Kansas City Current, and they made it 5-1 against the Portland Thorns in the 68th minute. Portland Thorns then scored three more goals and actually almost came back. They only lost 5-4. It was an amazing game all around. A lot of goals. Fun to watch. So, again, I think this league's going to be a really interesting one for me to follow. I've never really followed much of it before, but now that I know all these big names in there, I'm really excited to watch some of these games. I'm not going to say I'm going to sit down and think I'm going to watch a full 90, but I'll definitely be watching highlights, and who knows? Maybe if Marta and Christine Sinclair play against each other, I'll sit down and I'll watch that full 90, because that will be an exciting match. Either way, that's the National Women's Soccer League, folks. And here we are talking about March Madness. So when this comes out, Selection Sunday is already going to have happened. We're already going to know who the teams are. But, you know, I'm recording this beforehand. I'm trying to release this on time, and I'm just not going to have enough time with my plans to get this done after Selection Sunday. So keep in mind, a lot of this could be redundant for what I'm talking about, but I'm also going to keep it to teams that pretty dang well we all know we're going to get in. But again, Selection Sunday is today, Sunday, March 17th. The first four matches, which is the kind of play-in for the last two teams, is going to be March 19th and 20th, so that's Tuesday and Wednesday, with the first round of the March Madness starting on the 21st and 22nd, Thursday, Friday, second round being Saturday, Sunday, the 23rd and the 24th. I don't have any time off work. Well, I mean, I have the Saturday off, but this is one of, if not, actually, is not my favorite, but it is one of my favorite kind of weekends, weeks, stretches of the year is March Madness. I'm not going to say that the college game is better than the NBA game. The NBA game is, but the NBA game has its fault these days, and the college game definitely has the passion. The fans are there. I like this idea of one and done. It adds a whole load of excitement to it. Got the crazy upsets. A perfect bracket has never been guessed. So I'm really excited to to see this kind of all kick off. Finals is going to be Monday, April 8th at State Farm Stadium in Arizona. Funny that it's March Madness with the finals in April, but it starts in March, and it's absolutely the madness is in March. The Final Four and the championship game are the two things that are happening in April, and they're not that mad. You know, it's always one of those seasons that I really look forward to. So my prediction on who I think is going to be the, you know, the number one seeds, because obviously those are the teams that everybody wants to be. I think it's going to be UConn. They're the number one team in the country. I think they're going to stay the number one team in the country for a reason. Purdue and Houston are going to be the other two number one seeds. Now, do I think that those teams are going to be the ones that have the best odds? Nope, but those are the ones that have had the best regular season. They've put out what they've needed to get to this position and be the three kind of best regular season statistics teams in the country. I would want to put North Carolina in there. I'm not going to lie. I really do want to have North Carolina in there. But there's a couple of things that I'm not too sure after watching that is this really going to happen. So North Carolina lost the other day. It's no surprise there. And Iowa State won. So that was an absolutely huge match. Now, Tennessee was also in contention for this last number one. So again, UConn, Purdue, and Houston, locks. I think Iowa State, North Carolina, and Tennessee were all competing for that last spot. To be honest, it was mainly between North Carolina and Tennessee. Then Tennessee lost like a week or so ago, and I think that's what put North Carolina in the driver's spot for that seat. But the other day, North Carolina actually lost. And Iowa State was a winning team, and that's where I think it was absolutely big. I think they beat Houston, if I'm correct. Was an absolutely huge win. And considering that, again, as I just said, North Carolina lost, you beat the other team who I've said was a lock for number one. I think that should say something. Now, as much as I want to have Iowa State in there for the story and be like, yeah, they got it. You know, North Carolina realistically are the team that I think had the better shot to win the whole thing. So they're the team that I'm going to put there at that final number four spot. Again, Tennessee has fallen out. Iowa State looked good, but North Carolina, to me, are the better team. I can see Iowa State winning because, again, I have Houston and Purdue in there because they just statistically have the best record. So Iowa State's beaten some good teams. Maybe they should be there. But, again, North Carolina is the one that I think has the better shot to win it all. But, yeah, it was absolutely amazing to watch the last few games there. I said they kept losing. It was NC State was the team that beat them, and NC State's going to make it, and I am really, really excited to watch NC State. They're a really good team. Their big man had a really funny quote the other day. DJ Byrne said, "I watched a lot of Hakeem Olajuwon growing up, but I ended up with the body of Zach Randolph." Absolutely, if you go look at him, he's not kidding. He literally has the body of Zach Randolph, but he plays like Hakeem Olajuwon. It is impressive what this man can do with his size. He is really fun to watch. It's going to be exciting to see what that NC State team can actually do. You know, before I get into too much, let me kind of mention, I'm not a huge NCAA. I'm not a crazy, crazy basketball Sorry, college basketball fan to say that I follow it a lot. I do watch March Madness. I'm going to know some of the names there. I'm learning the names as we go along, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I watch it in and out and I know the players like it's absolutely crazy. But one of the big names that I am excited to watch is RJ Davis. So RJ Davis is the guard from North Carolina, and you know, I'm not going to put it lightly. I think he's one of the better players, if not the best player in college basketball this year. So it's going to be really fun to watch him. They've got another really good team. They've got a really good big man. I can't remember. Number 55 on their team. He's also very, very good. Don't be surprised if they make a huge run and they put themselves into the Final Four. You know, I'm actually not going to be surprised. That's one of my predictions. Shocker. I actually think UNC will make it to that Final Four. They're just too good of a team all around. So again, RJ Davis is probably the biggest name that I'm watching for in these March Madness. Other names, you know, Duke is another really, really big school. the kind of play style that this guy reminds me of, so I'm going to say Kyle Filipowski. Kyle Filipowski is, you know, the next white man to come out of Duke. I don't think he's going to make a huge name for himself in the NBA, but he's going to be a pretty good team player. He's going to carve himself out a pretty good role. But he, again, plays for Duke, Kyle Filipowski, and he reminded me, in a way, a little bit of Christian Laettner, just in the sense of the way he plays. Now, Christian Laettner, I'm not going to say is the skill-wise of Filipowski. He's way better, but they play similar styles, similar positions, and that's why, because they both play for Duke, they're both that white guy. It's who he kind of reminds me of, not skill-wise level, but play-wise level. So he's going to be one that I'm excited to kind of watch in this upcoming series. Another one that is a really, really exciting name that I'm going to – or sorry, exciting name. Exciting player that I think kind of has taken the heart of a couple of people. His name is Robbie Avila. He plays from Indiana State, and he's just – he's an interesting guy. You look at him and just off base appearance, you don't think he should kind of play the way he plays, have the tattoos he has, walk the way he walks. He's just – he's an interesting character all around. So him out of Indiana State, I'm very excited to watch him play. Who else am I excited to watch from what I've seen lately? Oh, right. There was one guy who just could not stop shooting, kept putting it up there. Reminded me a bit of, not skill-wise level, but like Jimmer Fredette. Who else was just a straight put-it-up scorer? I don't know. Jimmer Fredette's the one that came to mind because he was big when I was growing up. But it's the guy out of Tennessee. I can't remember his name. It's number three. The white guy. Let me Google it. Dalton Knecht. So Dalton Knecht out of Tennessee, I think can really light up the scoreboard. And again, when I was watching him play, he puts up a lot of points. But because of the way he plays, and again, because it reminds me of Jimmer Fredette, that's why I don't have Tennessee necessarily going a crazy far way into this. But the teams that I actually think are going to make it all the way to, let's say, the Final Four. So Final Four, for sure, I've got UConn, I've got UNC, I've got Duke. Much as I hate to say it, I do have Duke. And then, you know, Marquette's a pretty dang good team lately. Tennessee's a pretty good team, but again, I didn't like them. Iowa State, maybe, you know, it all depends on the bracketing. Again, this is after Selection Sunday, so I'm not saying that either of these teams ever have a chance to be in the Final Four. But those, to me, I think would be the four teams that could make a run. Now, I absolutely love Purdue. Purdue's got Zach Edey, the big man from Canada. He's about 7'3". He's a name that I forgot to mention, but I am super excited to watch him play. I just, you know, having watched what I watched last year, I can't say they changed too much this year. They don't strike me as that killer team that's going to come out and get it done. But I'm excited to watch them play because of Zach Edey, the big Canadian. He's a absolute giant when you watch him out there, so he's going to be fun to watch. Ultimately, UConn's the one that I actually think is going to win this all. They're a great shooting team. They've got a great big man out there in Donovan Clingan. Absolutely amazing. Tristan Newton, I actually think, is their best player. He's a guard that just gets it done all over the place when you watch him. He literally gets it done everywhere. I think he's averaging like 15-5-5 or over that. So he's going to be a really good player to watch. But again, the big man down low and shooters all around is what makes this team very good. They coach very well. It's something about this UConn team that I actually think they're the ones that are going to win it all. For those that don't know, the Syracuse basketball, they are my favorite team in college basketball, but I don't know if they're really going to be able to get it done. Judah Mintz is the best player on that team, so he's obviously a player that I'm very, very excited to watch. Number three on Syracuse, so good. I love the orange, mainly actually because of Big Daddy. He wore an orange shirt in the beginning of the movie. Then I kind of started watching them. And then Carmelo Anthony sealed the deal because he, in my eyes, is one of, if not the greatest college basketball players of all time. So I absolutely love Syracuse. They've fallen off lately. I don't think they're going to make a crazy big noise in March Madness this year. But, you know, they're one that I'm excited to watch. Again, who knows, maybe next Sunday. I'm not going to say maybe next Sunday. Next Sunday, obviously, I'm going to be recording. But I'll probably be touching on some of the major March Madness things that happened and maybe where I went absolutely wrong. I put a March Madness bracket out there. Again, UConn is who I have winning it all. Sorry, I haven't put a bracket out there. I'm in a league to put a bracket out there. So I'm looking at the website now. But UConn's who I'm going to pick. There you have it. I've said it a million times. Again, I have no real idea what I'm talking about, but this is going to be one of the more exciting things to watch. Starts March 21st, this Thursday, goes all the way, happens all throughout the weekend. I'm going to be locked into the TV. There's going to be games starting from 9 a.m. my time all the way till 9 p.m. my time. So exciting. I love this week. I love this kind of month, this stretch. Here we go. March Madness. Go Huskies. And to wrap up today's episode, we have the NFL offseason winners and losers. So, again, free agency started very, very recently. So, all the moves have been happening. Trades have been happening. The draft is coming up. I think next week I'm going to be doing a mock draft, potentially with some guests. If you want to be on there, shoot me a message. You can probably be on there. But I'm going to be breaking it down first. I'm going to be going through the divisions, then I'm going to be, again, talking about who, out of all of that, I think were winners and losers. So I usually kind of go in a kind of AFC East, North, South, West, NFC East, North, South, West. I don't know why my brain works that way, so that's the way I kind of wrote things down. That's the way I'm going to do it. AFC East, to start it off, did not really do much. I think all the teams have kind of stayed where they are. The draft is coming up. Not to say free agency is done. Not to say trades can't happen. But I don't think any of those teams have really done anything that's set them apart from where they were last year. I think the biggest thing that has come out of that division is Mac Jones being traded to the Jaguars, which means the Patriots are definitely going for a quarterback in this draft. That's the big news. But there's no big names that have either left nor joined either of these teams. So I'm not going to sit back and say that they needed to. I mean, the Dolphins were good. The Bills were good. The Jets can be good if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy. So they didn't necessarily have to do much. But the AFC East stayed pretty much the AFC East. But now we're going to go to the AFC North. And wow, the AFC North was one of the bigger change around, was one of the bigger move divisions in the league. So, you know, the Bengals were one of the teams that actually, in my mind, have gotten worse so far. Now, who's to say what's going to happen? But they've gotten rid of Joe Mixon. They've gotten rid of T. Higgins. And they're probably going to be getting rid of... they haven't gotten rid of T. Higgins yet. But T. Higgins put in a trade request. And Tyler Boyd's probably going to be on his way. So, those are three pretty big playmakers. Now, don't get me wrong. You still got Joe Burrow. You still got Jamar Chase. That's really all you need. I think Zach Moss could be a good back. Who's to see what they're going to get out of the draft this year? There's a lot of wide receivers in the draft this year. It is stacked with wide receivers. But because three, in my eyes, potential Pro Bowl, potential starter players all left this team, the Bengals have gotten worse because they haven't had anything yet. Browns have made kind of the next big moves, or sorry, the first of the big moves in there. Devin Bush coming over from Pittsburgh, well, actually midway through Seattle. And Jerry Jeudy in a trade with the Broncos. I'm glad he got a new face. But the Browns are who I think kind of have improved the least in this division. Actually, I wouldn't say the least. The Bengals clearly improved the least. But the Browns improved. The Bengals did not. So that's why I say they improved, but the least of the improved. Pittsburgh made huge moves at the quarterback position. They traded Kenny Pickett to my EAGLES. And they picked up Russell Wilson from Broncos, and just recently they won the sweepstakes for Justin Fields. So Bears are clearly going for a quarterback. I'm going to be talking about them later. But Justin Fields lands with Pittsburgh. Now, Justin Fields has already been confirmed to be the backup behind Russell Wilson. Who knows if that's going to last all year. I actually think that's really good for him. Justin Fields is one of my favorite quarterbacks. Yes, I'm a big believer of, my friends know this, I'm a big supporter of the Netflix quarterbacks, and he was on that Netflix show, QB1 Under the Lights. But I also just think he's a good player. He was really good at Ohio State. I think he plays very similar to Russell Wilson, so he could learn a lot from there. But another big move that Pittsburgh made was going to get Patrick Queen. So they stole him from the rival Baltimore Ravens. That's going to be a pretty exciting one to watch out there. So Pittsburgh are making a couple of moves. But ultimately, Baltimore has made the biggest move in signing Derrick Henry. Actually, it's not the biggest move, but the biggest move to them. Actually, I'm not even going to say maybe the biggest move to them. This is tied with re-signing Justin Madubuike. Madubuike signed for a four-year, $98 million contract, which makes him one of the highest-paid interior linemen. I think he absolutely deserves it. He tore it up. I think it was a big move in why Baltimore was good last year. But getting Derrick Henry is now what they needed on offense, so watch out, everybody. Roquan Smith and Madubuike on defense, now with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry on offense. Baltimore is making their run for it, and they're trying to dethrone this Kansas City dynasty we have going here. So Derrick Henry was a big signing. So again, all four teams have made some pretty big moves that have shaken things up. Now we'll move on to the AFC South. So AFC South is one where I absolutely love the moves that Houston made. They in my mind have made the we're really going for it now. So they got Joe Mixon from Cincinnati. Again, I mentioned they traded him away. They traded him to Houston for, I think it was for a seventh-round pick or something, maybe something else, but it was pretty garbage what they got rid of Joe Mixon for, so that was really, really exciting to see. But I think one of the, you know what, I'm going to say it, the best defensive free agent that was out there was Danielle Hunter. He had, 16 and a half sacks last year, so it was absolutely impressive to see him sign with Houston. Him pairing up with Will Anderson Jr., who was Defensive Rookie of the Year, is going to be absolutely impressive. I love Derek Stingley on that defense, so it's really, really exciting to see. Jeff Okuda is another big name that he hasn't put it together, but I think he can. Signing him to that team, you know, Houston's really, really fun, and they're going for it. You know, just like I said, Baltimore, they're also trying to make that dynasty. They're also trying to dethrone this Kansas City dynasty. As to the rest of the AFC South, I can't say they really did much. Jacksonville got rid of Curtis Samuel, but then spent too much money on Gabe Davis. They were the ones that made a trade for Mac Jones, like I said, from the Patriots. But he's just going to be a backup. I think that's going to be good for him to kind of go back to an area where he's going to like. That's going to be fun for him. Joe Flacco signed with the Colts, so that's going to be pretty exciting. So far, I think he might be or in contention for being QB1. No, that's a lie. Anthony Richardson's QB1. But Joe Flacco's going to be a really, really good coach, mentor. You know, he could start. Anthony Richardson was injured, so you never know there. But signing Michael Pittman was the big move for them. Tennessee, I think, just continues to Tennessee. You know, they lost Derrick Henry. I think that was going to be a foregone conclusion. But they made a pretty good move getting Tony Pollard out of Dallas. And they went out and got Calvin Ridley. So, you know, who knows? Will Levis is going to be their quarterback. And I think maybe with Tony Pollard, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins, maybe they are going to be able to put something a little bit together on offense there. They signed Lauren Cushenberry. He's a pretty good center. Kenneth Murray is a good linebacker. So that's going to be a, you know, big one to see what happens there. So overall, you know, Houston's going to dominate, I think, with the AFC South because of what they've done. Then we'll move on to the AFC West, where, you know, I'm not going to say crazy moves have happened so far. LA is in some really big financial trouble. So they've already gotten rid of Mike Williams. They're going to be getting, they got rid of Keenan Allen. They traded him to Chicago. So lost two big players there. They lost Austin Eckler, to free agency. So it's going to be crazy to see what happens there. But, you know, Justin Herbert, I like Josh Palmer. Who knows? Maybe Harbaugh can figure something out with the guy they drafted out of TCU last year, Quentin Johnston. But they've also got a top pick. So people have been saying they could go with Brock Bowers. Maybe they could go with Roma Dunze. It's going to be exciting to see what they do there to get Josh Herbert some help. But they haven't really gotten better at all. They're kind of like they're like the Bengals. They've gotten worse. The Chiefs, the big signing the Chiefs did was, I think, signing Hollywood Brown. He's not Tyreek Hill speed. No one's Tyreek Hill speed, but he's a very, very fast player. You know, he's in that contention of, dang, he's one of those fast players, one of the fastest on the field at all times. So pairing him up with someone like Patrick Mahomes is going to be crazy to see what happens there. But the big one for them again is re-signing Chris Jones and somehow getting the money to be able to get L'Jarius Sneed as well. So they kind of kept a lot of their good players. And the Broncos finally, they got rid of Russell Wilson and Jerry Jeudy, like I mentioned. So they've gotten a bit worse, but they've got another top pick as well. So we'll see what direction they go in. It's going to be exciting to watch there. At Vegas, you know, they've lost Josh Jacobs, but they brought in Gardner Minshew on a 2-year, $25 million deal. Really, really good quarterback, kind of that bridge player. So it's going to be exciting to see what happens there. But Vegas, I think, have gotten a little bit worse as well. Now we'll move on to the NFC. And again, same order. NFC East, my favorite, EAGLES Eagles, are an amazing team. So I've mentioned a couple of things already. They've traded for Kenny Pickett. But the big one, huge one, getting Saquon Barkley. So Saquon Barkley was signed for a 3-year, $37.75 million contract. So that's really, really fun to watch. Running backs got paid this offseason, and Saquon Barkley is going to my team, going against the rival Giants, and it's going to be really, really fun to watch. But then they also kept Landon Dickerson. Jason Kelce retired. That one hurt to watch. But Cam Jurgens, I think, is going to fill into that role pretty well. I don't think anybody could beat Jason Kelce. I think he could go down as one of, if not the greatest center of all time. So Cam Jurgens has huge shoes to fill. But I think he's going to be a really good center. So it's going to be exciting to see that offensive line keep it together. Brandon Graham's coming back on a 1-year deal. But the big signings were on each level. It was Bryce Huff on the edge, big pass rusher. Devin White in the middle, a really good linebacker, and bringing back CJ Gardner-Johnson. Now, CJ did poop all over the Eagles fans, so that's going to be interesting to watch him come back there. But, you know, they've made the improvements on the defensive side because I think we really struggled there. We fell apart at the end of the season, so I like all the moves they did there. Commanders were also a very, very busy team. Marcus Mariota, Austin Eckler, Zach Ertz, Cleveland Farrell, Bobby Wagner, Jeremy Chin, all names they've brought in. I like Tyler Biadasz. I think he could be a really good center. He came from Dallas Cowboys. So not to say the Commanders, I think, are going to win. I still think they're behind Philadelphia and probably Dallas. But, you know, they've put themselves above New York. That's for darn sure, because New York have gotten worse. They lost Saquon Barkley. On defense, they were pretty good. They picked up Brian Burns from Carolina. That was a huge move. So I can't just say they've gotten worse. They lost their star on offense, but they picked up a star on defense to go along with Kayvon Thibodeau and Dexter Lawrence. So, you know, Giants, maybe you're going to stay around where you are, but Commanders, I think, have just made moves to get better. Cowboys have done jack poop. Eric Kendricks is the only name that I've known them really get, and he's towards the later ends of his career. So big moves all around everywhere else. Cowboys, they ain't done nothing. NFC North, Chicago Bears were the big question mark of what's going to happen to Justin Fields. And, you know, they've just gone out and made big moves. So they've gone out and they signed DeAndre Swift, who wasn't re-signed by my Eagles. He had a really, really good season, so I think he could be a really good running back. And they went and got Keenan Allen from the Chargers, like I mentioned, how they basically got rid of a lot of their weapons. So they did that, and then finally, the other day, traded Justin Fields to Pittsburgh, like I've already mentioned. So Chicago, I think, is going all in on Caleb Williams at number one and giving him DeAndre Swift, DJ Moore, and Keenan Allen. Who knows, maybe at nine they get Roma Dunze or Brock Bowers to pair up with Cole Kmet, get this kid some weapons. You know, I was still a firm believer. I like Justin Fields. I think they should have kept Justin Fields, traded their number one to potentially number four, where Arizona, you know, Arizona with Kyler Murray might not have made a huge splash move, but somebody would have made a big move to get one of those top quarterbacks. Mainly Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is going to be the number one pick this year. I don't think it's going to surprise a lot of people when I say that, but I would have wanted them to trade back, get more draft picks, take Marvin Harrison Jr., have DeAndre Swift, Justin Fields, Marvin Harrison Jr., Brock Bowers, DeAndre Swift, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. What an offense. But they're going the route of Caleb Williams, and I can't necessarily argue because Justin Fields has not shown that he can be the guy. And from what Caleb Williams or the scouts are saying about Caleb Williams, he can be that guy. NFC North continuing. They've made some pretty big moves. You know, the Packers and the Vikings have kind of just not traded a lot of players, but Aaron Jones left the Packers to the Vikings. You know, one of the themes that I've seen here is there's a lot of rivals going. So Patrick Queen left the Ravens to the Steelers. Aaron Jones left the Packers to the Vikings. Saquon Barkley left the Giants to the Eagles. It's really fun to watch. There's going to be some big games circled on the board. Packers got Josh Jacobs from the Raiders. That was the move that they lost. So I think they've gotten really good there. They signed Xavier McKinney from the Giants. Xavier McKinney, I think, was one of, if not arguably, the best safety at his position in the league last year. The Giants, you know, they lost Kirk Cousins. They brought in Aaron Jones. But, you know, this is the window to capitalize. I don't really know what they're going to do. They signed Sam Darnold, but Sam Darnold's not going to be the guy with they've got Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson. So they can make quarterbacks look good, but they also need a good quarterback to capitalize on this team because Sam Darnold's not winning it for them. They don't pick high enough to get one of the top guys. You know, who knows? Maybe they are going to potentially try and trade to get someone like a J.J. McCarthy, who they are really thinking could be the guy. But, you know, Kirk Cousins, with the contract he got in Atlanta, I don't blame Minnesota for not paying him that much money, but it still hurts to see a quarterback that like use. Speaking of, we're moving on to the NFC South, and it is Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta. I think that was one of the bigger moves that happened. Again, whether it was too much money or not, who knows, but it was definitely a move that needed to be done. Atlanta definitely needed to capitalize. They've got all those first-round pick tools. You know, Bijan Robinson was a once-in-a-lifetime running back. Kyle Pitts was going to revolutionize the football game. He was drafted number 4 as a tight end. Drake London. I don't think a lot of people remember Drake London was, I think, potentially the first wide receiver off in his draft class, if I'm correct. He came out of USC. He's a really good wide receiver. It's just Atlanta has not had good quarterbacks to get him the ball. So now that they have Kirk Cousins, Atlanta has just put themselves into the leading role of the NFC South. Because in there, nobody else has really done anything. Baker Mayfield re-signing was, I think, the other big one that's happened in the NFC South. But nothing else has really happened along there. I'm glad that Baker did that, a 3-year, $100 million. Good job, Baker. He played really good for them last year, and I think he's earned what he's done for them. And the Panthers just continue to panther. You know, they did that trade with Chicago last year to lose their first-round pick this year to go up and get Bryce Young over C.J. Stroud, and then C.J. Stroud was a stud, and Bryce Young's a not stud. Then they got rid of Brian Burns and did not bring in a first-round draft pick. Same thing they did with DJ Moore. Same thing they did with Christian McCaffrey. So the Panthers just continue to panther, and they're going to be the bottom of the barrel this year. New Orleans Saints haven't really done anything. And again, Baker really was the only other big move in the NFC South. NFC West, nothing really happened there. I shouldn't say nothing really happened there. Cardinals didn't really do much. You know, Desmond Ridder left Atlanta. He didn't want to be the backup. So he left Atlanta for Rondale Moore. So he comes in. Again, Hollywood Brown left. This team's going to be, again, one of those bottom-of-the-barrel teams as well. It's going to be tough. Hollywood Brown left this team. So, yeah, they're not that great. LA Rams brought in Jimmy Garoppolo. Big name, but is he really that great? Not necessarily. He agreed on a one-year deal. I think he's just going to be a backup to Matthew Stafford. They've got a really old room in Matthew Stafford, Stetson Bennett, and Jimmy Garoppolo. But yeah, you know, San Francisco also didn't do much. Guess what? They didn't have to do much. They were in the Super Bowl last year. So I think they had a more complete team than Kansas City. Kansas City just had Patrick Mahomes. So yeah, San Francisco didn't have to do much. They've got a draft coming up. And again, Seattle didn't really do much. They've gotten rid of a couple of things. They brought in Sam Howell, who I think could compete with Geno Smith. But I can't say the NFC West has done a whole load. But the draft is going to be there. A couple of them have some pretty high draft picks. So don't say they can't do anything, but they just haven't done anything yet. So speaking of all of that, winners and losers. First winner isn't actually a team here. To me, it is running back position. Last year, the running backs were in a huge contention. I made a segment on, do I think running backs should get paid? I still stand by what I said, but I'm glad that they got paid this year. I mean, notable names that have already gone off the board. Saquon Barkley, again, has gone to my Eagles. Derrick Henry has gone to the Ravens. DeAndre Swift has gone to the Bears. Josh Jacobs to the Packers. Tony Pollard to the Titans. Eckler to the Commanders. Jones to the Vikings. And Devin Singletary is a pretty good running back, too. He signed for a pretty good lucrative deal to the Giants. So all big names that have gone off the board as compared to last year when they didn't really go off the board. So exciting to see, you know, the running backs get what they should have gotten. Now on to the two, you know what, I'm going to say the three teams that I think are winners. First one, yes, I'm a bit biased. It's my E-A-G-L-E-S Eagles. Some would say it's very similar to the kind of, what was it? Was it the 2010 or 2011 offseason? The one where Vince Young came over and proclaimed it a super team. They've made some really, really big names, but I think they've done the right names. They've brought some good coaches in. The thing that I think is going to be the one to watch that could be the demise is Nick Sirianni. The other team that I think is a winner from this NFL offseason, Houston Texans. I mentioned them before. I love the moves that the Houston Texans have done. I think it's really, really good. But ultimately, yes, I think the Ravens getting Derrick Henry is the one that's going to potentially change the landscape the most in terms of who's going to be competing for a championship next year. Because no, I don't think the Texans are in that contention yet. But Ravens getting Henry, huge. And Eagles making another one, huge for them. Now we'll go on to the losers. Panthers, again, not to say they can't turn it around, but the Panthers got rid of Brian Burns for garbage, considering they didn't get a first-round pick back. So they are losers. It's a culmination of a bit of last offseason, so it's tough. They don't have a first-round pick. But they haven't done anything to go out and say, you know, without our first-round pick, we have all this money. What are we going to do? They didn't do nothing. Similar to the Arizona Cardinals. You know, they had so much money, and they didn't do a single flipping thing yet. Not to say they can't. They have a high draft pick. They can make trades. Who knows? But they haven't done anything. And finally, the Cowboys. You know, again, like the 49ers, not the Cowboys had to make a move. But the Eagles made moves around them. The Commanders made moves around them. The Giants even got Brian Burns. But the Cowboys haven't done anything. But because I think of the salary cap they had and where they needed to make moves, the losers to me are the Panthers and the Cardinals. It's tough to see what they've done and how they've tried to improve for next year. I think maybe they're tanking for Arch Manning. Who knows? But there you have it. Winners, losers, the overall recap of the NFL offseason. I'm excited to watch what's going to come up. The NFL draft is coming up. I'm going to be doing a mock draft on my next episode, so sit tight for that one. But yeah, there you have it. There's my NFL take on it, folks. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode. Again, episode 5, season 2. As I usually say, if you listen to the whole thing, thank you very much. If you listen to parts of it, thank you very much. If it's your first time listening, I hope I said the right things. If you're a repeat listener, I'm glad I said the right things, and thank you for coming back. If you just put it on mute, it's almost finished. Thank you very much for the listen. It was a fun one to put on this week. Here in Victoria, not to kind of get too off topic, but it's beautiful. The spring's coming back. I went to the driving range with my sister today. Had a lot of fun there. It's going to be exciting to see the golf come out. I hope you all are having a really, really good day whenever you're listening to this, whether it's Sunday night, whether it's Monday morning, whether it's sometime during the week. I hope your life is going well. As always, Hakuna Matata.